Welcome everybody. Sorry we're in the dark, but we've officially worked out that it doesn't really work for the transmission if the blinds are up, so we're all about transparency except when it comes to looking out the window. It's for the benefit of our viewers, so I apologise. So the first thing I should do, I guess, this morning is welcome our new observer. Sorry, Makoto, I didn't know where you were sitting.
Yes.
Makoto is joining us. He's the new Jennifer. So he's representing Committee One. It's just admin. We're not being webcast yet.
Right? No. Okay. It's just we're not hearing the audio conference. So.
Okay. So I like to think that Makoto joined because Goro went back to Japan and said it was such a great committee that he recommended that he join. So welcome. So you're representing Committee One of IOSCO. Now, I'm not sure, so can Reinhard hear us or not?
Reinhard should be able to hear you.
Welcome to the IOSCO.
He's speaking, so I don't...
He sent your pin.
Reinhard, can you wave if you can hear us?
Okay. I can hear you.
Great, and we can hear you as well. Okay, I just had a couple of things
welcome
I wanted to
the
mention
IFRS
before we...
conferencing service.
Start the meeting. I don't know whether Katrina had anything, but there were just a couple of things that I wanted to share with you.
Please wait and we'll connect you to your conference. Please state your name and then press the hash or pound sign. Thank you. Has joined the conference.
Okay, so hopefully, Mikhail, are you on the phone now? Not just yet. From a sort of admin and communication perspective, I just wanted to share a few things with you that are going on. So the first is that you may or may not know that we had a discussion at the board meeting 2 weeks ago about... crypto holdings of cryptocurrencies and initial coin offerings. Quite a lively discussion. The upshot of that was that the board has decided that they don't want to do any standard setting at the moment on the crypto front. I think mainly on balance, given the handful really of IFRS preparers at the moment that we have with holdings of cryptocurrencies, so the board didn't think that on a sort of cost-benefit basis there was a case for standard setting at this point in time, although the board would like to, will continue to monitor the situation, so we'll act quickly in case of need. But in the interim, the board has requested that the Interpretation Committee proceed with considering issuing an agenda decision to confirm the current accounting under the IFRS requirements based on the discussions we have had last time, so confirming the application of IAS 38 or IAS 2, so that we can reduce the diversity of application, which we know, even though there's only, I think, 37 IFRS preparers with holdings of cryptocurrencies, a lot of those weren't applying either IAS 8 or IAS 2, and so the board would like us to look at issuing an agenda decision to try and reduce the diversity and to look at remind people of the disclosure requirements. So that will be coming back to you. So I just wanted to update you on that. The other couple of things that I wanted to update you on are things that we've either discussed with you or that relate to our work. So the first is the exposure draft that the board issued last year on the proposed amendments to IAS 8 to deal with the application of agenda decisions and voluntary changes in policies and the potential to reduce the hurdle for retrospective application. The staff are planning to bring a paper to the board in December, which will give us an overview of all the comments that we've received on that exposure draft. And at that meeting in December, we will have a discussion about a couple of sort of secondary issues, in the sense that they were issues where we didn't directly ask for questions but on which we got responses, that the board will discuss in December because they're relevant to the due process handbook review that the trustees is undertaking at the moment, which will be discussed in the January trustee meeting. So the board is going to discuss it in December, so the trustees at the due process oversight committee have got the benefit of the board discussion. And the two issues that will be discussed at the December meeting will be the status of agenda decisions issued by the Interpretations Committee. Some who responded to us had the view that the real question we should be addressing is the status of the agenda decisions rather than looking at how they're applied when you change your policy because of an agenda decision. My understanding is that the staff recommendation would be that we won't change the state, proposed change in the status of agenda decisions, but the board will discuss that in December, and then it will be discussed at the Due Process Oversight Committee of the Trustees in January. And the second issue that will be discussed in December, again related to agenda decisions, is the fact that in the exposure draft we sort of talked on the basis for conclusions about the timing of application of policy changes arising from agenda decisions, and we observed that we thought people should be allowed a, you know, reasonable period of time, but we didn't propose making amendments to IAS 8 in that respect, partly because of the status of agenda decisions, which makes it not really appropriate to do that. But a few people who responded to us had a suggestion in their responses that we should perhaps address this point by adding an observation in the due process handbook about the expectations for timing of application of changes and policies that would come from agenda decisions. And a few people suggested that was the right home for that. So we'll talk to the board about that in December, and if the board agrees with that, again, that would be a recommendation going to the Due Process Oversight Committee as a proposal to put into the exposure draft of proposed changes to the due process handbook. So I'm just letting you know that, given that they both link in with our very important work at the Interpretations Committee. And the other one that I had that I've got on my list, unless I've forgotten something, is the discussion that we had with you, I think, last time about the proposal for the board to potentially have the ability to issue agenda decisions in addition to the Interpretations Committee, with a process, a due process, the same as what we use here at the Interpretations Committee. That was discussed again with the trustees at the October meeting in South Africa. And included in the feedback we gave them was the feedback we'd received from you, as well as the feedback we got from the Advisory Council. The trustees' view is that we should propose in the Due Process Handbook exposure draft, again, introducing a mechanism for the board to have the ability to issue agenda decisions, but trying to address a number of the points that you guys raised around things like the fact that we don't expect to be doing this every board meeting, the fact that it doesn't change the role of the Interpretations Committee, how we're clear to people, you know, if they put in a question, what channel did it go down? So trying to address some of the, I think, important points that you raised last time. But the plan at the moment is that that would be exposed for comment. Yeah. Everybody might tell us it's a bad idea, but the plan at the moment is at least to put that out for comment. So again, following from your input, I thought you might be interested to hear what's happened with that. Any comments or questions?
So just in the cryptocurrencies, is there any indication of when we might expect a paper to come?
Soon.
I think we'll have to think.
January then.
We'll have to think about whether that works for a remote meeting, but January if we can, I think.
Yeah.
I'm keen to do it sooner rather than later while we still remember the discussion that we had.
Yeah, and I think you can expect that the paper you'll see won't be dramatically different. It shouldn't be dramatically different, and it won't be dramatically different in that respect.
I have a question. So you last September you raised a comment or concern, I don't know exactly, relating to the agenda decision we issued relating to the real estate revenue recognition issue in Brazil. Is there anything new on that, or you know the situation has evolved there?
As far as I'm aware, unless Carl tells me otherwise, there hasn't been any further movement in Brazil in terms of a further movement forward on the document that they were discussing there. Okay. Thanks for reminding me.
Nothing new.
Mary?
Can I just go back to Andrew's question about crypto and the Interpretation Committee's consideration? The paper that went to the board in November was, in terms of its analysis, very similar to the one you guys saw at the Interpretation Committee discussion, but it did also include a summary of the Interpretation Committee's discussion. So if people are asking questions about what, you know, what the views are, I think that that paper itself that went to the November board meeting is a very useful recap of state of play in terms of the analysis of IFRS standards.
Hmm.
Okay. Was there any other item you wanted to raise in the closed session?
No, I'll just give two bits of admin, which is Michael has let me know that transport to Canary Wharf is difficult this morning, so he'll just be slightly late. We have Mikhail should be done and obviously Reinhardt. And so that's
it. Okay. So how do we activate?
Sorry, I'll just say there are a couple of other updates and projects you discussed, but I'll mention that in public as part of the work in progress session.
That's a big sigh. Live, okay. All right, so welcome to the November Interpretations Committee meeting. We're going to start with a paper on IFRS 11. Craig, agenda paper 2.
Yes, thanks, sir. Good morning, committee members. Agenda paper 2 is about how a joint operator accounts for output arising from an unincorporated joint operation. Specifically, the submission is accounting for when the output a joint operator receives in a reporting period is different from the output to which it is entitled. The main facts of the submission are included in paragraph 5 of our paper. We performed outreach on this request, and the responses are summarised in paragraphs 18 to 24. Paragraphs 25 to 57 contain our analysis of the question. In particular, we have considered the position of a joint operator that receives less than its share of output, which we have termed an underlifter, in paragraphs 30 to 43, and a joint operator that receives more than its share of the output, which we have termed an overlifter, in paragraphs 44 to 51. In the fact pattern described in the submission, we think a joint operator's revenue from the sale of its share of the output, applying paragraph 20C of IFRS 11, in each reporting period, depicts its revenue from contracts with customers, applying IFRS 15. Question 1 on page 17 of the paper asks whether the committee agrees with our analysis of the requirements in IFRS 11.
Bruce?
Yeah, thanks. I'll kick off. I actually agreed with the conclusions from the staff. Having read through the paper, it was a good paper, and I actually agreed with the outcome. So.
Thank you. Paul?
Actually, I had a little bit different analysis. Comes to a very similar result, but different analysis. So as I think about it, as the commodity comes out of the reserve, is drawn up, I have to decide whose inventory it is. And if there's 100 units that are drawn in the period and their share 50-50 and they pay 50-50 in the production, I think it's kind of reasonable to assume A got 50 units, B got 50 units. Then they have to allocate the production costs. Each one has to allocate its production share of production costs and its share of the reserve to that inventory. And then I think what happens in my mind is since A is selling 52, they borrowed 2 of the inventory from B. And so comes to a similar result in that then A has sold 52 to its customers, B has sold 48 to its customers, and has B has this receivable on its books for the loan of 2 units to A, and A has a liability for to B for the 2. I don't consider that B sold the 2 to A. A is not its customers. It's not within IFRS 15. It's actually a lending.
Okay. So I think, just to clarify, Bob, so I think you get to kind of the same outcomes, but I think
I have the same income statement, same balance sheet, but different analysis.
Yeah, so in our paragraph 11, where we almost put we said when you credit cash of 50, we said it would be immediately in sort of P&L production expenses, you might say a first step as that goes into inventory, and then you think about moving into sort of cost of sales.
Because I don't think production costs get immediately expensed. They don't immediately go to the inventory.
So you agree with what's in the tentative agenda decision, because that really only focuses on the sort of punchline, which is does it go to revenue or not, right? Rather than the entries that are covered in the paper, which are more comprehensive.
Right? Yeah, I think even Bob agrees with the outcomes.
In the agenda decision, I would add another paragraph in between the third and the fourth paragraph, describing that this was actually for the underlift overlift, it was actually an inventory lending.
All right, Young Sue.
Actually, I have the same opinion as Bob. For the analysis, I think both are right. Bob's view is great. I think the staff view is okay. So I don't care too much about whose inventory it is. But I think the asset side, I mean, the output imbalance is also very important in understanding the whole topic. So as Bob suggested, I also suggest to include some descriptions about the output imbalance, how we do for counting for the output imbalance somewhere in the agenda decision.
I agree with the staff analysis and with the conclusion. I'm a bit annoyed by the idea of having a lending, because if you have a lending of inventory, then it would mean that you would get remunerated for that, or that you would remunerate the one lending, which is not the case there. So probably it's more like a prepaid payment, but a lending, I'm not that sure. So I was quite happy with the analysis of the staff, not strictly specifying the characteristic of the asset. Would see that more as a prepayment, let's put it that way, or as a payment in advance.
So not with the intention of putting words in your mouth, but does that mean that the tentative agenda decision, which only focuses really on this question of the revenue line, it would be your preferred approach rather than talking more about the mechanics underlying?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Guy.
Thanks. I guess I'm probably going to echo some of those comments. I guess my take on the result in the agenda decision, I'm fine with that. I was unclear though on what the nature of the underlifter's asset was or the overlifter's liability, and I know the staff paper said we weren't speaking to measurement, but I think the nature of the asset and liability is subject to some debate as well, as evidenced by some of the comments. But I don't think that really bears on what the agenda decision says in terms of how we present sales to customers. But maybe rather than specifying the nature of the asset in the agenda decision, if people felt the need to say something about that, maybe we could simply say both the nature of the asset and liability and the measurement are beyond the scope of the agenda decision.
Okay. Carl.
Yes, thank you. Similar thought to Bertrand's. Just to echo Bertrand's comments, I would not add the additional words in the tentative agenda decision, and I also would stick with the revenue recognition issue and would not expand to additional matters.
Okay, thank you. Tony.
Yeah, I agree with the conclusion that has ended up in the agenda decision. I think it follows from IFRS 15. I think it's also consistent with the agenda decision we did in 2015 about not accounting for revenue until it's been sold to the customers, and that your joint venture partner is not a third party for the purposes of selling output. So I agree with where the agenda decision has got to. I think I share the thoughts of some others that the balance sheet accounting is perhaps a little more complicated than the staff paper illustrates, but my sense is that we were asked about the revenue accounting, and I think it would be better to restrict the agenda decision to just answering the question that we were asked, which I think it does.
Okay. Would you go so far as, was Guy who suggested that we explicitly say that we're not touching the other aspects?
I'd be comfortable with that.
Martin?
I might echo that. I believe we are exactly answering the question. However, with regard to inventories and so on, I might fear that we would get up and add on additional questions, so to say, then if we are not solving it right now. But, task fulfilled with the wording.
Job done.
Efficient.
Gore?
Yeah. Like others, I agree with the staff's analysis and conclusion. And from user's point of view, I think that it is very good thing, you know, that clearly the requirement of IFRS 15 should lead to the staff's analysis, but currently that we have some diversity in practice under the IAS 18, so that from user's point of view, it is really welcomed that, you know, the diversity in practice will be, you know, reduced, you know, because of this agenda decision.
Thank you. Andrew.
Like others, I agree with the staff analysis and with the agenda decision. I spent a bit of time thinking about whether it's something where we could be more helpful and go a bit further with what we say in the agenda decision. And ultimately, I think I conclude that we should not. And that's partly because once you start getting into the undergrowth of all of the accounting, it gets quite complex quite quickly. The other is that there are quite a few different arrangements in practice. And I would feel a little uncomfortable that we make an assumption how it works without having all of the background. So I think that my preference at this stage is to go with the tentative agenda decision. If it happens to raise other questions, then we can address those questions when they come in.
Okay. Reinhardt, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, that's good. So I think as others have said, the accounting in my mind depends very much on the underlying facts and circumstances. In a situation where it is clear that there is an obligation to make up that balance and that balance will be made up through physical settlement as opposed to cash, I don't object to the accounting, but I think, as others have said, the actual terms and conditions can vary significantly in practice, where what I've observed is that imbalance there may be no obligation to make that up. The sales that are made are at market value and or are settled at cash. And so then I think you could end up with certainly a different accounting where if there's no obligation to make that make up that difference, that I can see an argument to say that that is revenue, not revenue from customers, but that is some form of other revenue. Clearly, there's, you know, the other joint operator is not a customer, but I could certainly see an argument for other revenue in circumstances where the sales are at market value, et cetera. So I think it has to be very clear in terms of what the facts are that this agenda decision is addressing to ensure that it's clear that city accounting that we're recommending. And I think, you know, when I thought about this issue, I reflected back to our discussions in 2015 where we had discussed similar issues, and we concluded that at that time the accounting very much depended on the facts and circumstances. It depended on why there was an under overlift, what's the nature of that, and that the accounting should follow it. At that time, we chose not to address this issue and essentially left it for the IFRS 11 post-implementation review. And so I think this issue also highlights the importance of that post-implementation review. But as I say, from my perspective, I think we have to be very clear as to what circumstances are that we're addressing.
Okay, thank you. Michael, are you on the phone and do you want to add anything? Okay, Mary, I think you're next.
I was just going to go back to the earlier point that a couple of interpretation committee members raised about commenting explicitly in the agenda decision that you're not addressing the nature of the item or the measurement. My first reaction to that is maybe to express some caution, because there are lots of things that you're not addressing, and in some ways to single out two, it implies a greater significance. I think generally you talk about what you're covering, and that's the end of it. So that's just an observation about that one.
Oh.
So in the staff analysis, could the entity in this fact pattern be recognized the two for which it has given over to A to sell to its customers as other revenue?
Well, in our analysis, we said no, because you'll know in the paper.
Right. I thought the answer to that was no. I think I was, and maybe I misheard Reinhardt speaking. I thought I heard differently. And as I look at the agenda decision, I don't know where I would point to in the agenda decision to tell somebody, no, that cannot be other revenue.
So you think the agenda decision should go further about that?
Yeah. And that was my point from the beginning, and that's why I looked at it a different analysis.
At the minute, we intend, because I think the point that's raised is good, we considered, so it's paragraphs 35 through to 43, is it, where we specifically address that point, Bob? Because I think, at least from our perspective, we weren't trying to say in this case that we think the overall revenue number recognised always in every situation could only be revenue from contracts with customers. So we're not in this case, you know, opining and saying people cannot have another revenue number. We just said, given these facts, to your point, given the facts presented in this case, we think the revenue that the joint operator would recognise would reflect or would depict exactly its revenue from contracts with customers. Because, as you say, Bob, in our view, that too could not be considered to be either revenue from contracts with customers, nor could it be other revenue in these facts.
Well, I think the agenda decision, as I look at the words of the agenda decision specifically, accepting the staff analysis, yes, I could point to and say, yes, it cannot, that's not IFRS 15 revenue. That's not a revenue from a contract with a customer.
I thought, for me, that's the real point that you're making in this agenda decision as drafted, right?
I think it's the second last paragraph is what we're saying.
Revenue from contracts with customers.
Yeah. But nor could you call it other revenue. So we used.
And I call it other revenue.
I think that's what the second last paragraph of the tentative agenda decision in Appendix A is, because it says the joint operator recognises revenue that depicts the transfer of output to its customers in each reporting period, i.e., revenue recognised applying IFRS 15.
I think if someone was being pedantic, just to put my pedantic hat on for a second, I think someone might be able to read that and say that you're saying that the sort of pure revenue from 15 line item can't be polluted by this, but was in a sense silent on whether there could be another income item, if you like, associated with it that could have a different label attached.
I mean, would something as simple as then saying recognises total revenue? I mean, I don't mind trying to make that clearer, or we could take it away and try to make that clearer if we thought that were helpful.
Gary.
Yes, I would support whatever the committee thinks we should expose in a tentative agenda decision. My reaction would be, I think the less we say about the balance sheet, the better. And as I read this thing, first of all, it says it's a two-year agreement. We're talking about this as if it's 2 1-year agreements. And I haven't borrowed from the other partner. I've drawn a little bit more than he has. And the fact pattern clearly says you may draw at different rates. So I don't owe anybody any money. My only obligation is to draw a little bit less of my share in the coming year. So we can get hung up, is it prepaid, is it loaning? I think it's just, it's in the balance sheet. I think we're gonna be asking a lot of questions because it says it's 2 years agreement, not 2 1-year agreements. And so there is no, this end of the first year is almost like an interim period for vis-a-vis the agreement. So I think the less said about the balance sheet, the better on here. We'll then go with what the sense of the room is, but that's my reaction.
A small suggestion in terms of the headline. I would align the headline with something related to revenue recognition because that's the focus, and the headline is not leading to that wording suggestion.
Carl? That's right, Young Sue.
Right. I understand the viewpoint that the balance sheet, when the remarks about the balance sheet can cause some confusions. But I want to concur with Bob. At least we have to say IFRS 15 is not applied to the opening balance of 2. Only in that case will the people will understand what we really mean by the gender decision. So I want to concur with Bob.
Andrew?
On the question of other revenue, I think if we were able to weave something into the tentative agenda decision, that would be helpful, because otherwise we get into the potential, as I think Bob's concern is, that you might recognize revenue for the same thing twice, once another revenue and then in the next period is IFRS 15 revenue. And I think perhaps Gary's point is one which weaves into that, that it's not that the underlifter has sold anything to the other operator, it is that the other operator has drawn more in that period. And I can't see that as giving rise to any kind of revenue. So if we were able in the penultimate paragraph in the tentative agenda decision to have something that notes that for the underlifter there isn't any revenue from the excess amount drawn because it isn't actually a sale, I think that would be quite helpful because it would just close off that particular loop.
Tony.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think that's what we said in 2015. It said that transferring some of the output to the joint venture partner is not something that gives rise to revenue. It was part of the previous agenda decision. And I just thought in response to some of the comments that Reinhardt made, my sense was the agenda decision is already specific to the facts in the submission. I agree that there could be a multiplicity of other arrangements that might get different accounting, but I think what we've said here is actually specific to the facts that we've received.
Okay. While I agree in my heart with these references to facts and circumstances, when I'm out in the field at the moment, a lot of people use facts and circumstances in a way that's much broader than what we might mean. So I'm always a bit about that. Does that mean I don't have to apply the agenda decision at all sort of way? But okay, let's see if we can vote on this. So the first thing I'm doing question one first. Well, we've done that.
Okay.
Isn't that what we just talked about?
Yes, sorry.
Sorry. Okay, so question two. Firstly, I'm going to ask you whether you agree with the staff's recommendation not to add the matter to our standard setting agenda.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12
in the room. And Reinhardt. Mikhail, are you on the
phone?
No. Okay. And so then too. So that means that we're working with the tentative agenda decision. Petrina, first, before we vote on this, do you want to mention the bits, the comments that you've received?
So the comments we've received, and then I'll add my thoughts on those. So we've had a suggestion, and I think we can take that away from Carl to think about whether we put the word revenue somewhere in the title. So that's editorial, but we'll think about that. We've had a suggestion from Bob to add something after the third paragraph around inventory lending, but then equally I've heard other comments that said, let's not go there. So my view on that is that we won't add anything extra in that respect. I think the only question then we have is do we go with the agenda decision as worded? Or do we feel there's a need to make clear in the fourth paragraph that starts with consequently, do we think we want to do something extra there that sort of makes it clear that we're saying that the total revenue or all of the revenue that the joint operator recognises in this fact pattern is simply that what would be its IFRS 15 revenue.
Can I get a show of hands on who would support the tentative agenda decision with that clarification added in, so to be more clear that we're being very specific that it's not going through a revenue line item? Can I get a show of hands on that?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Reinhardt, your hand wasn't up?
No.
Okay. 12. Okay. Right, we're running well ahead of schedule, so we need to start then. Are you Mr. IFRS 9 for this morning? Still talking about selling stuff, but...
Yeah.